Yeah, Shaitanka, my beloved guru, please bless me that my mind may turn towards the Dharma, that the Dharma may become the path, that the path may dispel delusion, and that delusion may dawn as wisdom. Don't be alarmed. This is not the whole thing. I'm honored to be able to present a Dharma talk on the relationship between teacher and student. And from lived experience, my relationship with my beloved guru and teacher, His Holiness Yeshe Tangpa. Zen Master Dogen said that it's better to give up Zen practice than to practice without a teacher. He also said, to learn the practice and maintain the way is to abandon ego attachment and to follow the instructions of the teacher. The essence of this is being free from greed. My Rukuru Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche said, the teacher is regarded as an elder, spiritual friend, or Vajra master. He or she has ways and means to create situations in accordance with our own receptivity, our own particular style, in order to waken our native intelligence. While it's not universally mandatory to have a teacher, it is strongly encouraged and often considered beneficial in Buddhism, particularly for those aiming for deeper practice or a more structured path. While you can practice Buddhism without a teacher, it's almost impossible to challenge your own mind, as it is very skillful in deceiving you. Suketsu Norman Fisher, the former abbot of the Zen Center, the San Francisco Zen Center, and founder of the Everyday Zen Foundation, gave a Dharma talk on no Zen teachers, or no teachers of Zen, rather, back in 2014. And you can access the talk in the archives of the San Francisco Zen Center website. In the No Teachers of Zen Dharma talk, he said, students are responsible for their own practice and their own awakening. No one can communicate a truth worth knowing. The only worthwhile truth is the one you find uniquely for your own life. He also said, on the other hand, I think we all know that Zen is not a low ranger practice. Zen teachers are important to the practice, and the tradition certainly says so, and experience proves the tradition to be correct. In the beginning, I looked for a teacher without thinking of the relationship, looking for inspiration before guidance. I've always considered Shunryu Suzuki Roshi my first major influence after reading Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, my opening text back in 1970. I instantly had this distant, intimate connection with him and have read that text more times than any other Buddhist book of my life. I took every opportunity to put myself in front of Buddhist teachers. I found my way to Thich Nhat Hanh, Maureen Myung Stuart Roshi of the Cambridge Zen Center, Reverend Master G.U. Kennett, His Holiness the Dalai Lama often, and the Vidyadhara Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche. I put myself in front of them, but I never sat at their feet. For a student to find a teacher, so many things need to come together. Where one is in one's life, whether the window for spiritual practice is opening or closing, the personalities of the two individuals involved, and chance circumstances. It was a chance circumstance that brought me to His Holiness Yeshe Tangpa Rinpoche. In 2012, I was traveling from New Hampshire to Connecticut to visit a friend, and I decided to take the back roads of Vermont and Massachusetts instead of the expedient highways. I'd always looked for a Buddhist center, whatever my travels, wherever my travels took me, to find someplace new to investigate and perhaps visit. Google found Anadyr Celtic Buddhist Center in Saxon's River, Vermont, and the webpage intrigued me. As I'm Irish and I'm a Buddhist, so why not see what it has to offer? I sent an email about my journey to Connecticut and my journey as a student of Buddhism. The response from Yeshe Tangpa Rinpoche was to stop and visit as I was passing through the following week. So June 6, 2012, I went to Anadyr and met my beloved teacher for the first time, not realizing the life-changing event that was about to unfold. Yeshe La greeted me with a warmth and acceptance that embraced me. The next 2 hours went by in a moment, and the energy that passed between us was palpable. We shared history, experience. He questioned me about my intention, my practice, and where my life was going besides to Connecticut. At the end of my visit, Yeshe La empowered me as a lineage holder of the Celtic Buddhist lineage and autographed a copy of his book, The Mahasiddha and His Idiot Servant. And I tell everybody, if I had read this before I went there, I don't know if I would have gone, because it's incredibly mad. It's his life with the Vidyadhara Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche. He blessed me as I was leaving and said, if you are willing and have courage, you will find out who you are. You will come back here to do the work and realize the way on this path. It was D-Day, June 6, 2012. We always called it Dharma Day. I drove to Connecticut in a daze, knowing that something big had just happened. I was just 2 years clean and sober, but I rode this new and true high all the way to Connecticut, and still to this day. That was the start of a 13-year devoted relationship between teacher and student. I visited him often over the next 2 years as I split life between Central and South America and here in Vermont. I was formally accepted as his student in 2013. And in 2014, he asked me to move to Anadyr in Saxon's River and be ordained in the Order of Celtic Buddhist Monastics. As he said, it was an ordination that was preordained. I was to serve as the resident monk and his attendant. Although he would say that if you get an attendant, don't get one somebody as old as this one. The energy I felt back on D-Day was getting stronger, and I recognized the true connection between us. From then on, I sat at his feet and was given instruction in tantric practice. I completed Nundro, which is 108,000 recitations, 108,000 visualization, and 108,000 prostrations. I was younger then. After doing Nundro, I received the Abhisheka of Vajragini, which is what my beloved teacher was a master of, as well as the empowerment of the outer, inner, and other ways, Dhiti Yoga, and I received the cutting through practice of Chod. I realized the teaching of crazy wisdom as given to him by the Vidyadhara. Trungpa Rinpoche described it as an innocent state of awareness that is wild and free, completely awake and fresh. It is a spiritual worldview that represents thinking outside the box, moving against the stream. Crazy wisdom is about having a free mind, one that is not held down by preconceived notions or cultural conventions. Crazy wisdom is about living in this moment, rather than having all of our perceptions colored by what we think about the past, the future, or the ideas we have about things. The idea behind crazy wisdom is that sometimes those of us that aren't enlightened don't really understand those that are. Enlightenment is the realization that samsara and nirvana, normal reality and transcendent reality, are actually the same, that there's no separation between the self and other. For 18 months, I lived at Anadaya and spent every day with my beloved teacher. He never missed an opportunity to point the way for me. Once again, if your student is that old, you have to realize that they won't hear you the first time. You have to speak louder. And he often referred to me, about me, to other people as Trungpa's joke on him. I cooked with him and for him. We walked along the Saxton River discussing Dzogchen mysteries. He taught me ancient Celtic ceremonies at the Sovereign Circle in the back of the center. We smoked cigars on the screen porch where he told stories about his life with the Vidyadhara, more crazy wisdom for sure. He challenged me. He challenged me to be true to my practice and to follow the way of Avalokiteshvara, hearing the cries of the world and serving all who suffer. This was the calling to serve people with substance use disorder and people suffering from grief that I've followed at his request. I traveled with him when he was teaching. We went to Soghilar Dharma Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan, the White Lotus Farm of Drakten Yeshe Dorje Rinpoche. Drakten is the incarnation of the 19th century Siddha Do Kense Yeshe Dorje and a speech incarnation of Dorje Trollo. During the three-day teaching, my beloved guru called on me to teach without giving me any warning. And at that time, I received Trakten's blessing and the empowerment of awareness and direct introduction, which connects the student to the intrinsic nature of self and their own mind essence, or Rigpa. It was on this trip that I had my first vision experience, which Trakten Rinpoche said would not be the last, and he was not wrong. I accompanied my beloved to Karma Choling in Barnett, Vermont, which is the seat of the Vidyadhara, where he was teaching at the request of Lady Diana Mukpo, who was Trungpa's wife. Every opportunity that Yeshe had to point the way for me, as I said, he did. I have to tell you one story. When I received transmission from His Holiness, there was an honor dinner, and there were 12 people there, other students, another Rinpoche who came from Michigan. And my beloved teacher was an incredible cook. One of his side gigs before he started Anadaya Celtic Buddhist Center is that he was Bill Cosby's butler for 7 years. And he asked me what I wanted to have for the honor dinner. And I said, my favorite is your white bean and escarole. And he said, fine. So we're at this dinner table, all of us, said the Gata of Grace, the beginning of the meal, and everybody is just very comfortable, and I'm feeling very honored. And I start to eat the soup, and I look, and I said, Yeshe, is this bacon? And he said, yes, Lama, and it's chicken stock, enjoy. And everybody at the table was just sort of aghast because I'd been a vegetarian since 1976. I got it in a minute. When I finished the soup, there was a little pile of bacon at the bottom of the bowl still. But he looked at me with love in his eyes and said, Now you can go back to being a vegetarian. There's no more grasping. I had to be a monk escort for a Buddha, a 300-year Buddha that was going out to New Mexico to one of my students, one of his students. And there was this whole process of preparing the Buddha with peppers around the base and wrapping it in three different ways and binding it with a blue cord. And the whole time realizing that when I got to Bradley Airport and going through TSA with this almost solid bronze Buddha wrapped up, blindfolded, that I might have a problem. And he assured me, no problem. Just make sure they don't take off the blindfold. And I got there, and obviously 25 minutes of unwrapping it. But the two TSC people were so respectful, and they were so polite and inquisitive. They would ask why it's wrapped like this or whatever. And I got down to where the Buddha was fully exposed, and there inside is a space, and some of my beloved teacher's hair was in there. And the blindfold. And I said, you don't want to take the blindfold off. And they immediately started to rewrap it because they were afraid there was some kind of curse involved. The last days. April 2024, he told me that he had cancer of the liver. Through June through October, we had five rounds of chemo. I sat with him as much as I could. The scars disappeared. And in January of 2025, he entered hospice. He had had enough. He was 90 years old. Dartmouth Hitchcock had said, they had never done the chemotherapy regimen on him, on somebody his age. And he went through all of the issues with chemo. And he just said, I'm not going back because they're supposed to be doing something for me. And they've just been doing something to me. We had a ceremony and a service around accepting the barter of dying. January 15th, he stopped seeing any visitors. I talked to them on the phone often, and I said, Yeshe, I really want to see you. And he said, you've seen me. The last week of his life, Julia, his wife, called and said, Yeshe wants to see you. And I went to the Buddhist center. Three of his children were there. Another student, myself, and he was very weak. He was about to enter the barter of death. And he gave me his last request. We had talked about how he wanted to be buried. He wanted to be buried in a boat. And I was able to convince him that the idea of putting his body in a boat, setting it on fire in Lake Champlain would probably be against a number of agencies and laws. January 31st, I was in Connecticut. Now, right before I left, everybody left the room, and he patted the side of the bed, and I went over and sat beside him and held his hand. And without any words, just stared at each other. And I realized I was blessed. I was blessed with the experience to have really been intimately involved with somebody who had so much wisdom, a realized mind. And every time we parted throughout the 13 years, he was from British background, would always be the British palm out military salute. And that one last time, we saluted, and I said, I'll see you soon, Yeshe. And in a very weak voice, he said, I hope not.
Mm-hmm.
And at 10:35 on January 31st, he left the body. I came back from Connecticut. We sat with him for 4 days, which is a tradition. And then we brought his body out to the back where he wanted to be buried in the boat, had a ceremony then. So he entered the Bardo of Death on the 31st of January, and he came out of the Bardo of Death on the 21st of March, the vernal equinox, 1 week after his 91st birthday. He came to me one night. I wasn't dreaming, I wasn't asleep, but I wasn't awake. And nothing was said, because when there's that moment across the veil, lips don't move, words aren't said, they're felt. The next day I was at the Buddhist Center and I was talking with his wife, Julia. And his two kids in London, Percy and Sophie, had called. And he had appeared to them that same night. So I know he's out there. I'm grateful for the opportunity of having been with him. And I'm really grateful for the opportunity to be able to speak about him and about the relationship between teacher and student. It's made my life. It's made my practice. It's surely helped me.